Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to DSC's Untamed Heritage, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining and informative fashion as only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC's Untamed Heritage is brought to you by Dallas Safari Club, conservation, education, protecting hunters' rights. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Texas-raised hunting products, the scent gods. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, calling's calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Hunting seasons are open. Mule deer season is here in Texas. And it's one of those times where we're getting an opportunity to spend again on the Hargrove Ranches. And this evening, I feel truly honored to have Josh Lyle with Trigicon and Eddie Stevenson with Driftwood Media, who's also involved with Trigicon, and of course Craig Archer, who runs, hunts, and does a bunch of other things for the Hargrove Ranches. Gentlemen, it's absolute great to spend time with y'all in hunting camp.
Great to be here.
And some of you have had extremely good success, Josh.
It's been a good week. Came in here to take a mule deer and ended up being able to take a great one on the first day, and then ended up deciding to go ahead and try to take a whitetail as well. And so it has been quite a week.
Now, this was your first mule deer?
That's right. It was, yeah. Whitetail is, you know, I've come from the southeast most of my life.
Right.
My hunting life. And so mule deer are not on the menu over there, so getting the chance to come out here to Texas and hunt my first one was super exciting, and I couldn't think of a better place.
Well, this is a very special place as far as I'm concerned, because it's really kind of unique. A lot of people may not know the mule deer were really kind of accidentally introduced in this country back in the early 1950s. They were moving mule deer from the Trans-Pecos of Texas to the Panhandle. The truck broke down and they didn't know what to do with it, and they were concerned about the health of the animals, so they just opened the doors and released them not very far from here, where we are right now, really kind of close to Snyder. Tell me about what was your impression about hunting mule deer? Now, I know you've obviously hunted whitetail. How would you compare mule deer hunting to whitetail hunting?
They just seem to be such a calmer animal. I mean, they were so much more zen. You know, like you say, here you've got both the whitetail and the mule deer in the same.
Really cool.
So it's just so interesting to see how their behaviors are different. And you're going in a field and you got both of them there. And, you know, you got the whitetail take one glance at you coming through the field and those tails go up and they're gone. And the mule deer, you look at you and it's almost like they yawn and they just keep eating. And, so it was really interesting to see that. And, just the behavior even between, because obviously we're getting here into the rut, and
right.
So seeing that behavior is a little different with the mule deer, how they handle it as well. And it's just interesting, and they're beautiful animals, man. See, I've seen pictures of obviously, but to actually get up close with them, they're just gorgeous animals. I love the coloring of them and everything else. It's been great to see, and we got to see several bucks out there, so we wasn't just one, so we got to see a few, and they are just every one of them beautiful.
You did. I mean this is, again, it's such an absolutely great place. These mule deer really haven't been hunted. I mean, I've hunted in areas where mule deer were every bit as spooky as what the whitetail deer were. These deer here have really kind of lived a pretty good life, haven't they? And if you're hearing background noise, we're in camp. We're just finishing an absolutely fabulous evening meal from a great hunt today. The steaks the size of small, no, of large rows. But, so you may hear some yawning here occasionally in the background as well, too. I want to stay with Josh for just a little bit before we get with the rest of the guys. But tell me a little bit about your hunt and what you use. I mean, obviously, you're with Pridgicon.
Oh, yeah.
And what scope did you choose to use for this particular hunt?
So for this hunt, I'm using an AccuPoint 2.5 to 12.5. So AccuPoints, obviously, are, you know, our scope that we're probably the most well-known for in the hunting circles, because you don't have to worry about a battery to still have that illuminated reticle. So it's got the fiber optic that gives you the light during the day, and then it gives you the tritium should the fiber not be getting any light and real, real dim light. Like, for instance, the dim light I took the whitetail in this morning. If you're in a situation where you're kind of in that transition period, it's nice to have those two different options for illumination, but never have to worry about a battery going dead. So that's the AccuPoints, what I use on my kind of go-to hunting rifle. And it's a 6.5 Creedmoor, and of course I always run Hornady LDX in there, a 143 grain, and it is just, I mean, there's not been an animal that I've put that bullet on that has gone any more than about 50 feet. They just drop. It's just an amazing bullet. So the combination of that bullet and the optic was just perfect, and I took out that mule deer, and then in short progress later took out that whitetail today.
On your mule deer, we were not very far away when we kind of ran into each other and saw some bucks. They disappeared. They kind of walked off. And then tell me what happened.
Yeah, they disappeared, and so we started going on down this little trail a bit and kind of coming around in a circle, and then all of a sudden we saw another buck that had, unlike, you know, any of the other ones we had seen before. At first we thought he might be, but no, he was a whole different one. And just a beautiful animal. Of course, you know, he was chasing a doe, and so, you know, she was kind of going along and kind of hoping she was going to come towards us, not away from us, and she did for a bit, and so got in position, got there, kind of got the bead on it, and just as I, you know, had that that illuminated reticle right there on the side, he just turned right around, put his butt right at me, and started walking away. And so then we just had to wait a bit and just kind of sat there, and you just kept following that doe. That doe kind of turned off to the side, and then he turned and gave me that nice broadside shot for, you know, about 2 or 3 seconds, and took it. So it was very fortunate that we came across him. He's a beautiful animal.
He really is. He's actually a 5x5, and I'm a little jealous. I'll tell you what, he's for a desert mule deer, particularly in the areas. I mean, there are a few bigger ones, but there are very few and far between. And he was like, what, 25 or so inches wide?
Yeah, right about.
Good forks on one side, the other side didn't fork quite as deeply, but absolutely fantastic animal. I love that AccuPoint. To me, that's probably the one scope that, if, like you said, it's a go-to. I've used it in a dangerous game situation. I've used it for hunting mountain game and all that kind of thing. And it's fabulous. Eddie.
Yes, sir.
So what were you doing here? And
well,
as I say that, I'm looking over, and Pico happens to be a Jack Russell, and he's kind of been your constant companion since we've been here. So, you've been here, you've hunted in the past.
Right. Well, honestly, I was here 2 weeks ago, and I did a whitetail hunt with the media for Trichicon, and we had the Huron series of scopes, and we had the AccuPoint series of scopes, and a lot of the time, these guys hadn't seen the Huron yet at all, so it was kind of their first sneak peek with the Huron and be able to use it in the field. And that's Trichicon's a little more entry-level version for whitetail hunters in particular. It has everything Trichicon is known for, it just does not have an illuminated reticle. And it has hunter holes and something that they can use for any common caliber. And I had the guys out here for that, and we had such a good time on our whitetail hunt. I saw so much game, and the facility, the guides, everything was more than I could ever ask for. And honestly, when we found an opportunity to come out and mule deer hunt after that, I knew you were going to be here as well. So, and I've got my little pup with me, and he's my blood trailing dog. And
right.
Literally, I got a lot of work for him the week before when we were out here. And frankly, there wasn't much work, but I pretended there was. And,
exactly.
And I got him on the track of a lot of different deer, and I figured, well, let's bring him out again this week. And I was able to spend time with you and Josh, and you know, I was fortunate enough to hunt with Josh for his mule deer and his whitetail, so I got to be the spectator for that. And that I would, you know, I love doing that as much as I do hunting my own game.
Got to do everything to pull the trigger.
Oh
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And But it's just been a blast. It's been a lot of fun, and I can't wait to come back.
Well, that's truly an interesting area in so many ways because it, in terms of habitat, you're dealing with kind of a sandy country that's shin oak, and shin oak is basically oak that comes up to your shins or maybe above your knees, and it's there in great amounts on that country that's sandy, and then you go to the edge of the river bottoms here, like the Double Mountain Fork of the Brazos, and I mean, it turns into a totally different world, doesn't it? Mr. Archer.
Very much so. Very much so. You get a lot of variety through a shorter mileage up and down this whole area. So,
I mean, you can stand in one spot, literally, and have one foot in canyon country, and it's kind of a reddish clay sandstone mixed with all kinds of different other colors. The gradients where you see like a bluff is just out of this world pretty.
It is. It's very unique from one aspect to the other. It's, you know, therefore you also, a lot of people think when you get in that old rough country, like in those breaks, that's strictly mule deer country. Well, fact of the matter is, you're going to find just as many whitetails in there as you will muleys. And so, you know, when you come out here, the people that come out here, you know, you have to be fairly aware of what game you're looking at, and because you darn sure don't want to pull the trigger on the wrong one.
Exactly. Because the mule deer is very restrictive here in a lot of different ways, is it not?
They are. You know, I mean, I guess I've always kind of, you know, when I got here, 12 years ago now, it was hardly any mule deer here. And I set out to grow that herd, and it's always been about low pressure and letting them grow, leaving them alone, and as you can see, our numbers have greatly increased.
In a day's worth of hunting, it's not uncommon to see 100 total mule deer.
It's not. It's really not. I mean, and you know, we're to the point now that I've started looking into maybe possibly doing some MLD for mule deer, especially because of the does, because our does are just. We have so many more does than we do bucks at this point that we need to probably eliminate some of them within the next few years to keep our numbers better for the breeding purposes.
Exactly, and what you're referring to is the MLD, is the managed land permit that's acquired through the Texas Park and Wildlife Department, and then they issue permits for both bucks and does based upon the population, long-term goals, and the habitat, you know, at that particular moment kind of thing. And that's an absolutely fabulous program because that, too, allows you to hunt later into the breeding season.
Exactly. And, you know, and I mean, you know, like as y'all noticed through this hunt here, I mean, a lot of the deer that were the bucks we're seeing are the younger bucks because the rut has not kicked off yet. I mean, if you can be here 2 weeks later when the rut does finally kick off, it's just a whole different, you're going to see a whole different set of deer that you don't ever see any, but they don't ever get killed because the season's over.
Right.
So, I mean, and those are your mature deer, which need to be taken out of the herd, and then let's let these younger ones come up, and because they are the more prolific breeders.
Well, as Josh mentioned, I mean, there is some chasing going on right now.
There is a little bit, yeah.
But it's probably not to the point yet to where it's like going crazy.
No, we're still one cold snap away from it happening.
So, well, let's talk about that a little bit. It's been a little bit on the chilly and airy side, has it not?
Been a little frosty. But, you know, with the wind that we've had the last 2 days, the weather, overcast, I mean, mule deer, they're a different animal. They're not like whitetail, you know. I mean, they would rather lay up and stay on a sunny side of a bush out of the wind a little longer before they get up in the mornings. And so you can get out there and bang the bush all you want to try to find them, but mule deer are probably the hardest animal when they lay down. They're probably one of the hardest animals I've ever seen to try to find and get them up to hunt them.
No doubt. I mean, I've literally all but stepped on them, particularly in kind of this kind of oak country like we're hunting in, to where you just don't see them until all of a sudden. And a lot of times I've had them not get up until I'd walk past them.
That's right.
So I learned a long time ago that hunting this kind of country, you look in front of you, look either side, but you also look behind you once in a while because sometimes they'll wait for you to go by and then they'll finally get up and move.
You know, Larry, we talked about that yesterday, the importance of whether you're walking or driving or glassing or whatever you're doing, if you stop at a spot for a few minutes and then you go to move, stop again for just a second. A lot of times that second pause, they get nervous and they got to go.
That's
now.
Right.
The first time they know you're there, everything, you know, they're hidden, they feel safe, they're not going to move. But when you go to move and you stop again and give it an extra minute or two, they can't handle that. And they've got to get up and they've got to go. Whether it's a whitetail or a mule deer or whatever it might be, that you know, that need to get up and get out of there really kicks in. And you see a lot more animals that you might not see if you just stopped for a second and went on down the road, or if you stopped walking and then kept going. Just that little bit of hesitation for whatever reason kicks in that prey instinct, and they got to get up and
they
go.
They got to move. Yeah.
And we really saw that a lot. And, you know, something I wanted to mention real quick is the kind of bittersweet bonus to this trip. And it's bitter for Craig and his guys, but just the sheer amount of wild hogs that are in this area right now. And it's a bonus for the hunter, though, because, you know, once we get our whitetail or mule deer or whatever, we get to go out there and hunt pigs. And they can be challenging as well. And I think just in this camp the past couple of days, we've probably killed 10 hogs at least, you know, at this point. And we need to do a whole lot more, apparently. But they're out there and in numbers that really are surprising.
All this old country, particularly the Chenery, has a tendency in certain years to produce a fair amount of acorns. And when it does, it looks like the hogs take great advantage of those.
Yeah, they do. You know, the years that we don't have the acorns, you know, they what they end up doing is they end up tearing up all of our food plots. You know, they'll go in a 10-acre food plot in one night and wipe out a whole food plot. And, I mean, you turn around, you got to replant. And I mean, the devastation is horrible when it comes to the pigs. And, yes, unfortunately, Eddie, I do have a zillion of pigs. You know, but I mean, that's one reason why also anybody that comes out, I mean, that's included in a hunt.
Sure.
You know, if you want to kill 10 of them that show up, then have a good time at it. Kill 10 of them, you know.
Yeah, there's no bag limit. There's no size limit.
No, they're
and
not.
And y'all have them here from everything from day-old pigs to, you know, 300-pound-plus hogs.
You bet.
Boars with substantial teeth and some of them.
I bring it up because you don't think of this country in particular.
No.
For hogs, you know, and you really don't. You think it's a little too far north, a little far west, and, you know, that's just not where a lot of pigs are going to be. But sure enough, they can make a living just about anywhere they go. And this is proof in the pudding here that they are there.
They're unbelievably adaptive. I mean, I've seen hogs up in the high country of Colorado above timberline, and I've seen it down in the desert in Mexico and in the cold country in some of the far north country. I mean... Even where you guys are up in Michigan, where the headquarters is up there, it's not uncommon, almost in that area, to run across hogs every once in a while. I know I've run across them in Ohio and even up in Canada a time or two.
Wow.
They're interesting animals because they really adapt to so many different types of terrain, temperature variance, food availabilities. They seem to be able to make it on just about anything.
Well, and you know, and that's also, you know, one thing that people also need to understand, though, is those hogs are predators. And I mean, they're hard on my fawn crop every year. I mean, they'll be the first one that a little baby fawn jumps up and they see it, they're going to take it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're bad.
Most people think hogs are slow, you know, they just kind of move around. But you're right, they're amazingly fast.
They are.
Years ago, I was working on one of the ranches in South Texas down below San Antonio, up north Laredo, and we could not increase our fawn survival rate. And we were shooting coyotes and we were doing everything right, more than sufficient food. And so this goes back years ago before we were shooting hogs out of helicopters. So this happened to be some property that belonged to the governor of Texas. And he was able to get me a permit. We shot 20 hogs during the time when those fawns were being born and right after, and which there is in middle of July. And 18 out of the 20 hogs that we shot of sizable hogs had fawns in them.
No way.
And wow. So we started going in and really knocking hard on the the wild hog population, and guess what? Our fawn survival rate started increasing. So, but you know, people don't realize how fast some of these hogs are and how long they can run something. I mean, their stamina, most people think, well, they just maybe run a little bit short distance, but they can run for a long time. And of course, they've got noses in terms of being able to smell things that are phenomenal. So, you know, a lot of times people say, well, the first few days that fawn really doesn't have any kind of odor or anything like that. But that may be true to us, but it's not necessarily true to those hogs that are out there. Eddie, you mentioned the Huron scope. Why the Huron? How did the Huron, and with my saying that, I've used it and I loved it. I love it because it's also available in a 30mm tube. And it's a very lightweight scope. And even though we're talking, you mentioned it might be some of an entry, and it was really kind of designed, as I recall, for whitetail deer hunters. But I'll tell you what, if I were taking a scope to the mountains and didn't want to have a whole lot of weight with that setup, with the reticle that it has, that is an absolutely fantastic hunting reticle, period. But so how did the Huron come to be?
Yeah, you know, at Trichicon, we've just got a whole bunch of hunters on staff. I mean, pretty much everybody who's there hunts. And you know, right from our founder and owner is just a huge hunter. And so we've always wanted to continue to increase our product offering for folks who hunt. And one area where we didn't have something that just was absolutely perfect was for the North American whitetail deer hunter who does, like you said, want something that's light, has a real intuitive reticle. And so what we did is we developed that Huron from the ground up specifically for that. So as Eddie kind of alluded to, it's the exact same quality glass that's in our top-of-the-line AccuPoint. Same adjusters, same everything. So it's got the same quality build. It's got that same, and I think, you know, and you've experienced this obviously, Larry, but when somebody first looks through a Huron or any of our Trichicon scopes, they just comment on, my goodness, I didn't know it could be this clear. Like the clarity, you just
absolutely
have to experience it. And,
right.
And I'll say it's even hard to experience it in a store. It really, it's best experienced if you can go outside. So even like if you're shopping for a scope, I highly recommend to people, you know, go into the store, ask them, hey, can I take a couple of these scopes outside? You can come with me, you know, if you want to, but let me look outside and actually see what it looks like when you're looking through natural light and seeing a distance and what the difference is, because that's what you really can tell, the difference in a quality scope. And so having that same quality glass and that Huron enables, you know, that whitetail deer hunter to be able to have incredible light transmission at those key moments of time, which is, of course, you know, like we've experienced here, right at dawn, right at dusk, when those deer are really moving. And so having that great light transmission gives you that great quality, and then having those intuitive, that hunter holds reticle. So basically for all your common deer cartridges, you're not going to have to do anything with that reticle to have all your drops just dialed in. So you're going to zero it at 50, and that same zero is going to be at 200, and your next line down is going to be your 300. It's all set up. And, you know, we've had a lot of people come in and use those. We've obviously, you know, showed it to the media, and they've gotten to come out, and they've all commented on how just very easy that is to just come out there and have such confidence in your scope that you're going to have all those drops built in, be able to take that shot that's right at that edge that you're comfortable with. You know you got this shot, and the scope is there for you with that reticle. So that's kind of how we built the Huron, was with that need in mind of that whitetail deer hunter and understanding how we could kind of build that feature set for them and still come in at a price point where it makes sense for them to have that quality piece of glass on top of that deer rifle.
When that was being built and developed, what caliber round range were y'all looking at?
Really the core 300s, you know, so the stuff that folks are very comfortable and regularly shooting with, so your 30-06, your 300, just all of the folks that, you know, all those kind of core calibers,
right,
people are going to use, that 30-30, all going to fall into this same ballistic, you know, model that's going to enable those drops to be consistent.
It's
work.
It's fast, it's very simple, and you really don't have to be thinking about it. And so very often, when you do get a shot at one of those really big bucks, you want it that way. You don't want to have to be thinking about, well, I got to do this, I got to do this. All you want to do is go, okay, this is the whole bang, pull the trigger.
Yep, exactly.
Now, I've played around with several of those scopes and different calibers, and it is amazing how accurate they are and how true they are to those lines that are in there.
Sure. Yeah, our engineers, I mean, that's what they do, right? So they really worked on it hard, and to be able to come up with something that, again, could be intuitive, and give you also the confidence you can have in a trench gun scope that the durability is going to be there. So, you know, we always come up with, every drop shouldn't be followed by a warranty claim. You know, if you hit it up against a tree, you shouldn't have to worry about, oh man, did I just break it? And is that zero still going to hold? So we put all of our scopes through a testing regimen that we call the Science of Brilliant. And that enables, you know, you to, as the hunter, to have confidence that no matter what you do with that scope, you're going to have it. It's going to be ready for you when you want to take that shot. You're not going to have to worry about, oh, man, I dropped it or I bumped it up against the tree when I was pulling it up. And you don't have to worry about that because you're always going to have it there. So having, you know, all the great quality glasses in the world is going to help you if, you know, you've just broken it because you dropped it. And that's not going to happen with TrenchCon. So that battle-proven, you know, heritage that we've got, we transferred into these hunting scopes. So.
Yeah, and that's a big part of what you guys do as well, too, is it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the heritage of TrenchCon obviously comes from the ACOG, and the Marine Corps adopted that almost 30 years ago, and now just this year adopting the VCOG, which is the variable power version, basically, of an ACOG, just as battle-proven and durable. And so that heritage of building products that can survive on the battlefield has carried that into our hunting optics. So, again, you can have that confidence in it when you take it out in the field.
One of the things I really enjoy about the, beyond everything else you just mentioned, is the fact those people that work for TrenchCon are true users of the product. And they put it through the paces, and particularly on the hunting side, which is what I'm associated with. Eddie, how did you get involved? I mean, you and I go back to a long, long time ago to different companies and all those kind of things. But then several years ago, I noticed all of a sudden, hey, Eddie Stevenson is over connected with TrenchCon.
Well, you know, I've been in the hunting industry my entire life, right out of college, and I worked for a major firearms manufacturer. And after about 14, 15 years of that, I set out to start up my own PR and media relations company. And sure enough, TrenchCon came along the exact same year. And, you know, what an awesome brand, just the clout they had in the military community. And they were trying to grow, just like Josh just talked about, they were trying to grow the, you know, the hunting side as well, and which is my first love, you know, coming
exactly
from that background.
Right.
And everything just lined up, and it worked out wonderfully. And I've been able to promote the brand with the media, the writers, you know, everyone we work with in that aspect. And it's just, when you have a brand and a company that well-respected and that much quality, it makes it easy, to be honest with you. And I've loved every minute of it.
It's nice to be associated with a product that really does what it, or what does what it says it's going to do, and have the backing behind it that it does in terms of people more and technology more than anything else.
You know, and the fact is, we're here, we're using the product, we get the media out there, we do events prior to launches, we make sure things are exactly what we say they are, the quality's there. It, you know, this thing delivers 100%, and not a lot of companies can say that sort of thing. And TrenchCon has always been that way, and it's just a phenomenal brand.
Again, it comes back down to you guys use your products. So I want to know a little bit more about this whitetail that you shot, because I'll be very frank with you, I saw it the day before, and I was impressed with the deer and all that kind of thing, and then I found out, hey, Josh is going to get to go hunt whitetails too. So I was thrilled when I found out that you were going to go to that area. Okay. But tell me a little bit about that hunt.
Yeah, it was exciting to be able to get out there. I didn't think I'd be able to do both a whitetail and a mule deer this week. And so, yeah, we got up, you know, obviously before dawn, got into a stand. We knew, you know, there'd been some deer out, seen them on the trail camera. So we got in there, and actually before there was any real light out, I was looking out, and you could see some bushes and that kind of thing. I saw a form kind of moving.
Right.
And just one, though. And, you know, just by looking at the basic outline that I could see of it, I was like, that just doesn't look like an outline of a doe. It just looks too big.
Right.
It just doesn't look right. So I was just hoping it was going to hang around. And, you know, it you kind of went off in the brush and couldn't see it for a bit. Kept, you know, the light started coming on a little more. Got the binos out, and as Eddie mentioned, he was out there with me, and it was great to have him, to be able to have another set of eyes trying to see, you know, what we actually had there.
Yes, sir.
You know, he was grazing around, so being able to try to pick out what he really had as far as a rat goes was tricky. And so it took us, you know, probably 20 minutes or so of the light starting to come on to actually be able to see what we had there. And man, we started, even still when we were seeing it, we were like, looks like he's a solid 8 point. He looks, you know, and obviously his neck looked good, just, you know, looked like a little older deer. And so definitely decided, all right, I'm just going to take him. And so, again, it was still dim light, so it was definitely great. The scope worked great for me in that situation because, again, having that low light, you just get so much light transfer that comes through. And then I use mine's a green reticle because I like that. I really like how green stands out.
I do, too. That's my favorite by far. The ones that I have, and I want more, yeah. Obviously. But absolutely, that is the greatest as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, particularly, you just think about, you know, the colors of animals, right? What the colors you're going to be shooting against, and you want to show up. The green just shows up so well, and it I think it helps you be more accurate when you have an illuminated reticle because it helps your eye draw into it.
It just focuses
you down into that point. It's a lot harder, I find, with just a simple crosshair to get your eye. You can do it, but it's almost like cheating, you know. You're just making it a little easier on yourself by having the green dot there. So, you know, I put that green dot right there on him. And, you know, did a slow squeeze of the trigger. And, you know, Eddie, you know, he was commenting afterwards. We saw this deer. It's like, you know, that Hornady bullet, it hit him. And he ran off, but he was running off as if he was running from the sound of the shot. It was like he almost hadn't known he was shot yet. And he just kind of ran off to the side and then stopped a little bit away. Like, you know, okay, what was that sound? And then started to walk almost back a little bit and then just fell right over.
Yeah,
ended up being, you know, again, not more than 50 feet from where, you know, I shot him. And so it's just, which again, unfortunately for Eddie, you know, he didn't get to do as much tracking as he wanted to do with Pico here.
Right.
But we still got Pico out there just to see what we could do. But man, that bullet just absolutely destroyed it. Just dropped him right down.
I absolutely love that ELDX bullet from Hornady. I've shot it in a lot of different caliber, a lot of different rounds. And to me, it's like Trigicon. It's simply the best there is. Over the years, when I was with Shooting Times, a bunch of other gun writing I did over the years, I got a chance to work with several different gun companies and also ammo companies. And to me, I've never run across a bullet that is as accurate or as deadly as what that particular bullet is. And I've shot everything from some big stuff down to some little stuff. So, and again, in a great variety of calibers, a great variety of rounds. I dearly love the AccuPoint, and I've had the opportunity to use the Huron in several. There are what, four or so?
Yeah, four of different different magnification options. You got
right, and I've had a chance to play with three of those, and I love the one that's got the 30mm tube. I've played around with it, and again, it's just absolutely amazing how true it works on all that. With this one, I came in and I've got one of the 10mm scopes. Mm. And I will tell you that after having shot the Huron and the AccuPoint, it took me a little bit to get used to the particular reticle that was in there. But once I've gotten used to the reticle that it's set up in there, I've used that gun now in a 280 Remington and the, I think it's 150 grain ELDX Hornady bullet. I've used it in Missouri and I've used it here and had an opportunity to take an old buck that Craig and I kind of been looking for a last 2 years at least, right, Craig?
Every bit of it, yes, sir.
Just an old, big, absolutely gorgeous
6 point.
6 point.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
Brow tines, you know, and a back point and a main beam. He came in this morning, actually, came in the early morning and before it really got light and then disappeared. And I mentioned to the cameraman, we're actually doing a show for Trigicon's World of Sports and Field on this hunt. And I told the cameraman, hey, Joe Satori, and I said, Joe, I said, if that buck comes back later and nothing else comes in, because we were looking for a really nice 10 point or something like that. And if he comes back in, he's not going to leave this field. Well, when I hit him, he did leave the field, but it was only by about 15, 20 steps from the field that he left it. But absolutely gorgeous old deer, about a 6, maybe even 7-year-old deer. And as Craig we really looked for this deer the last couple of years and trying to find him. And so this is one of those times where we were at the right place at the right time. But you mentioned that deer, too, had been showing up all over the ranch at one time or another.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as 6 miles away from where you shot him this morning,
right?
You know, and that's also that just means that he's probably breeding a lot of does spread out all over the place as well. So those genetics are here. So as you know, when we were driving away,
exactly,
there was a hot doe, and lo and behold, we're pretty sure it was one of his sons chasing right behind her. I mean, he almost looked identical.
He did. So. He wasn't quite as big, but I mean, in terms of antlers, and of course, this was a pretty good sized body deer as well, too, the one that I shot. But there's no doubt that he had almost exactly the same antler style.
So I guess we have another hit list deer.
You know, it's always good to have some of those hit list deer.
It is. You know, I guess my thing about it is doing the kind of my style, what I've always done, which is low pressure, high success. Some of those deer get through every year, unfortunately. I mean, even with the MLD, we can go in later in the season and try to find them, but they're just as hard to find late as they are early.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we end up taking probably anywhere from 6 to 10 culls a year out of the, after all the hunts are done.
Right.
You know, I have a hit list of deer that are on cameras and everything else, and we will go out and we will try to find those and eliminate those deer in the process. Those are the ones that people, they pass them all year long. They're not going to pay money for them. And so a lot of that stuff, whenever we take them, we will grind up the deer meat, or we'll process the deer meat and we'll give it to the hunters for the hungry, or I donate it to the church somewhere. And they'll give it to the hungry people. So anything that we'd always take here is always passed along to somebody that might be more needy or in a needier position at that time. You know, so it's all about success of the ranch in the long run. That's what we're looking for.
You also, and I want to touch on this just a little bit, y'all also run beef here. This is a cattle ranch.
It is. Yes, sir.
What particular breed of beef do you have here that we ate some of tonight that you could cut with a fork that had a flavor that is second to none, very properly prepared, I might add, by you, Craig, on an open fire? But what breed is it?
Those are the Akaushi beef, which is, again, the Japanese beef. It's not Wagyu.
Right.
It's a red Japanese beef is what it is. But yeah, we've been raising them here, I guess, now going on probably 7 or 8 years. And very fortunate that whenever we do slaughter, I keep back usually about a half a beef for hunting season. And that's what I feed our guests whenever they come in. You know, if they want us to cook for them. The ones that don't want us to cook for them, sorry about them. They don't get in those freezers. But no, they call it, the Heart brand is kind of the company that brought it over here and got it started. And,
yes, sir.
You know them well from your part of the world down there by LaGrange and in that area.
Yes, sir.
It's heart healthy beef. The fat content in them is kind of supposed to be equal to or that consistency of an olive oil. So it's not as hard on your arteries and everything else. So what gets that is, as you noticed, whenever you cut into them, yeah, there is a lot of marbling throughout these beef. They're, you know, pretty much, they're pretty solid. That's all I can say about them. I've had, over the last two times that I've cooked them, I've had people tell me that's the best steaks they've ever put in their mouth.
Oh, they are.
You know, and that's, like I say, I'm not saying that's the cook by any means, but.
Well, I'll say the cook had certainly something to do with it, but you're starting with an unbelievable piece of meat to begin with.
We are. So, but yeah, that's the main beef, but now I'm going on to bigger and better things, and this year I've started breeding red Angus to black Wagyu bulls, so that's going to be another beef that we're going to be testing out and here in the next few years to see what we want to know what makes the best beef as well, because whenever we're looking at the Hargrove name, I mean, whether it be through the hunting operation or through the cattle operation, we want to be known that, hey, we're going to produce the top stuff, no matter what. We're looking to be the best at everything we're doing. So,
I think you've done it. Yeah. And I want to volunteer to be one of the tasters.
We can make that happen.
Okay, yeah.
We can make that happen.
I suspect Josh Nettie might volunteer to that part as well, too. But before I get back to TrenchCon just a little bit, tell people how the best way to get in touch with you, Craig, as far as hunting, because you have their hogs, their mule deer, their whitetail, turkeys,
we have
predators. There's an abundance of coyotes and a few bobcats in this country as well, mm-hmm. too. So what's the best way if somebody's interested in a hunt or to learn more about the Hargrove Ranches in terms of the hunting side of things? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, and people have to forgive me because during hunting season, I don't take a whole lot of time to update my pages, but I do have a Facebook page, which is Hargrove Hunts. We do have a website, which is www.hargrovehunts.com. And then I've got an Instagram page, which is Hargrove Hunts as well. But then also, if people want to directly contact me, email is always the best. And it's craig@hargroveinsurance.com. That's C-R-A-I-G at Hargrove, and that's Hargrove with a V. insurancespelledout.com, because this is my second job. That's craig@hargroveinsurance.com, and then I always call my cell phone, 325-660-4274.
Can you repeat that slower this time?
325-660-4274. And when I'm out here at the ranch, it doesn't ring a lot because we're in one of the greatest places out here that phones don't work. Phones don't work most of the time. But if people leave me a message, I always tell people, I said, yeah, you may not think that I'm calling you back, but give me a few days. I promise you I will always call you back.
It just takes me
a little while to get there. Those are the ways to get in touch with me. I've had numerous contacts through Facebook this year. That's always a way to do it. Usually I can answer those if it's late at night and I happen to be sitting in the right chair to get the right service. Anytime anybody wants to call, always tell people, leave me a message. I will get back with you.
And we'll make sure. This is my third year being here, and I can't wait to come back next year, to be frank with you. Absolutely fantastic hunting, great facilities, out of this world people, and the food is, don't come here thinking you're gonna lose weight, because I don't care how much you walk or what you do, you're still going to gain 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds while you're here, kind of thing.
Well, we may not succeed the other way, but you're not going to go home hungry.
You do succeed the other way as well, too. Eddie and Josh, TrenchCon is continually moving forward. I know that you brought some products down that we're not going to be able to talk about at this moment, but y'all are continually working on new products. Is there anything that's kind of coming down the mill, since it looked like we're not having a SHOT Show this year, that we can kind of maybe give people and maybe a little hint of some things that are happening and then give the website to where, or the source where they can find this information?
Sure, yeah. So, this year, despite obviously it's been an odd year, as we all know, but the TrenchCon's continued to push forward, with innovation. Our engineers continue to work and turn out new products. So we released here a couple months ago the RMRCC. So not specifically a hunting optic. It's more specifically targeted to go on a pistol, particularly a compact pistol. Now the RMR, it's big brother there, a little bit bigger version of the same thing. Obviously, it is certainly a hunting optic. I know you've used the RMR.
Oh, absolutely.
I've
gotten to where I used to use a lot of variable long eye relief scopes, and they have been replaced by those now, simply because of the fact that they're quick to use, quick to get on site, and all those kind of great things, and don't weigh nearly as much and aren't as cumbersome, and the list just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it's amazing when people have that transition over from an iron sight pistol to a pistol with a red dot on it. So the RMR is obviously, the market leading optic to go on top of a pistol, and the RMRCC, which we released just a couple months ago, is now that same optic just shrunk down to be able to fit on a perfectly on a compact pistol.
Right.
So for those folks who want to carry with an optic, they now have an option from Trigicon with the ARMRCC. So very excited to have that come out. And yes, as you mentioned, you know, there's always new products in the pipeline with Trigicon. And even though SHOT Show's not happening in January, keep an eye out in, you know, in that time frame. And then even throughout the year, we've got things scheduled and planned. So lots of exciting things still coming. So definitely check out, you know, Trigicon.com. Obviously, our website has all the latest updates in there. Also, follow us on social or at Trigicon or at Trigicon Hunt, which is on all the main channels. So that's where you get up the latest information. And you might even win an occasional optic or do some other things on there, too. We do some interesting things on there and social. So definitely give us a follow.
Well, if I can get back to the office anytime soon, you'll also see a picture of your deer, and we'll do that on Trigicon Hunt.
And
we'll try to mention a little bit about coming hunt with Craig on that one as well, too. Eddie, anything that you want to add to this before we close it out?
No,
you're getting ready to go back to some other place else. Josh has got to go on, and I'm still hunting another extra day, so.
Yeah, I'm going to try to pick out a couple of days to hunt on my own, you know, and try to take my little boy Wesley and
perfect
get him a big buck before the season's over and get ready for Christmas. But otherwise, we're ready for the new year.
Look forward to catching up with you guys somewhere, either in this hunting camp or maybe another one down the road somewhere.
Absolutely.
DSC's Untamed Heritage is also brought to you by Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. Wildlife Systems, serving hunters and landowners since 1987. Kennetrek Boots, for the trail less traveled. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Pyramid Air, your one stop for everything air gun.
Wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.